We will begin with some brief words from Lake Erie Biofuels CEO, Mr. Leonard Kosar. Now a few words about Leonard. Leonard Kosar, a former General Electric Company executive, joined Erie Management Group in October 2008. He started his career at GE on the Manufacturing Management Program, holding several manufacturing roles in GE Aircraft Engines and GE Appliances. While at GE Appliances, Leonard held the role of President, GE Appliances Asia, based in Hong Kong. In that role, he led the restructuring and return to profitability of GE's 230 million appliance business in Asia. Leonard's additional roles have included President and CEO of Storage USA, a GE Capital company. In addition, he served as the company officer and president of GE Plastics Pacific, based in Shanghai. Today, Leonard is the CEO of Lake Erie Biofuel. With that, I introduce Mr. Leonard Kosar. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and welcome everybody to the conference call. We have a great turnout, and we really appreciate that this morning. I think we have a very unique story to tell in an environment of instability and disarray in biofuels. We see a lot of stability and direction. We are probably, this year will likely be the largest biodiesel producer in America. We will produce over 45 million gallons. We think we're unique for a number of reasons. One, we're running full blast. We wish we could produce more. We have an investment going on immediately, in fact, ongoing, to expand our plant. And we're profitable. We've been profitable all year. We think there's really three very simple reasons for that. First and foremost, we have terrific people. We have over 100 years of industry experience, both at the factory level, at our laboratory level, and in our technology and research department. We have very, very unique blending capability. This year we will run over 15 different feedstock types, everything from, you know, fats and greases to fish oil to virgin oils. This year we'll actually use less than 10% of our feedstock will be soybean oil. Again, our motivation is to find the lowest cost feedstocks and mix and match them to hit various specifications for customers. I think the third reasons why I think we're unique and have been very stable in this environment is we're very well capitalized, which has been a problem for our industry, certainly over the last year, as a kind of a perfect storm of issues have hit it, which I'm sure you're all aware of. So we think we're quite unique. The biggest reason for this conference call, though, is to talk about our name change. You know, why are we going to HeroBX? Quite frankly, we think this industry needs a hero right now. We're the biggest. We want to be more vocal. We want to be really a voice for our industry. We're doing a number of unique things from a public relations standpoint to better define our industry, because what I believe is when we don't define our industry, others will, and then we'll do it in very, let's just say, very suspicious ways. So HeroBX, why HeroBX? One, we are growing globally. We are expanding our factory footprint nationally. We already have a global presence and we'll continue to drive that. There are huge biodiesel markets all over the world. We wish, obviously, we had a more mandated market in America, but we don't. If we had one, that would be terrific. But our company right now is not totally dependent on that. Because we do have such a global presence both in Asia and Eastern Europe. The other reason why HeroBX? We wanted a name that was a little more compelling as far as our industry goes, something that sticks out, something that's unique, something that can get people's attention as far as consumers. We believe, yes, we sell to other businesses, but at the end of the day, the consumer is very important in driving demand, in driving driving demand for the product with retailers, but also consumers vote. And we need to educate consumers better on what biodiesel is in this industry. It's one of the reasons why we're the major sponsor of a film that actually opens today in San Francisco, I believe. The plan is to be shown in 150 cities. That film is Fuel. It won the best documentary at the Sundance Film Festival. And we are a major supporter of that film. We support not everything in it. Okay, we don't support every word in it, certainly in its position with oil companies. But we do support the full story that it gives on what biodiesel is and how it fits into energy policy over the next decades and what it means to America. So we're excited about that. You know, we talk a little bit about technology pathway. You know, we are deep down the road on what we call second-generation feedstock. For us, that's a mustard weed called camelina, which will grow very successfully in Pennsylvania. That is a big focus for us as a bridge, kind of a bridge feedstock, until we can get to something, one of the algae solutions, which we believe is a little further out, at least 5 years. We think camelina is, in the next couple of years, we could have it up to 20% of our feedstock. And certainly in the bridge period to algae, we believe we'll be using multiple feedstocks, again, mixing and matching feedstocks to drive the lowest cost and the best quality. That has been the formula that has kept us successful to date, and that is going to keep us successful in the future. So with that, I think I'll open it up to questions.
And we'll now take our question. Caller, your line is open.
Yeah, this is Jerry Perkins, editor of Biofuels Journal. I'd like to know, you said that currently less than 10% of your feedstock is oil. Repeat, please, what the other feedstocks that you're using are and where you're getting them from.
Well, we get feedstock, first of all, from all over the country. We have been using, and again, it's varied, but we've used a lot of yellow grease, which is a waste grease. We've also lately been using a lot of corn oil, which basically comes off of the ethanol process, which comes out of the DDG, which we've been very successful in running very, very high quality biodiesel with it, and recently it's been the lowest cost feedstock for us. We've run animal fats, we've run greases, we've run fish oils, various types of fish oils, from as far away as Mississippi. I really don't want to get to real specifics because I don't want all of my competitors to know where we get this feedstock. But suffice to say, it's very broad, and our blending capability is really helping us enormously. The nice thing in this industry is, you know, 2 years ago in this industry, customers were very, very interested in what is it made of? What's the feedstock? We've really gotten to the point here in our company, again, formerly Lake Erie Biofuels, of having credibility and just meeting specifications. And we now talk to customers in terms of specifications. We will figure out the feedstock blends to get there.
And we'll now take our next question. Caller, your line is open.
Hi, my name is Susan Reedy. I'm the editor of Biofuels Business. And you talked about your international presence. Could you kind of expound on that and just what all you mean? Or are you selling the biodiesel internationally?
We do sell internationally. Last year, obviously, was much higher. But given the European situation, that market's really been, for the most part, really quiet for us. We sell all over the world. We sell to Asia, and we sell to. We see a real growing demand in Eastern Europe, really the kind of the former Soviet republics, which have been a real good source of demand. And we have, you know, some partnerships globally with various distributors. Our production this year will be about 50% global, 50% domestic.
Caller, go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Cindy Zimmerman with Domestic Fuel. And you mentioned in your release that you think that algae biodiesel is 5 years away at this point. It seems like there's a lot of interest in that right now. Any chance it could be sooner than that?
We certainly would welcome that in our planning, though, and as far as a business plan. That's we actually think it's 5. We think it could be sooner. However, we are making some investments in camelina in the very near term here to bridge that gap. If it happens earlier, that's terrific. Because again, you know, our motivation for developing for second and third generation feedstocks is, you know, we could have the food for fuel debate all we want, and whether that's real or not, who knows? What we want to do is to have better control over our feedstocks and be more vertically integrated backwards into the feedstock. So that's why camelina is our bridge feedstock, but we're going to control all the way down to the to farmers, do the extraction, and pump into our plants. Algae, if it happens quicker, that would be terrific. There's a lot of things going on in algae in a lot of different directions. The right now, you know, it gets down to the scalability issue for algae oil. We can get you could find algae oil, but it just is not a commercial and it's commercial scale at this point. And we think it takes just literally millions and millions and millions of dollars of research to do that. And clearly, the good news is that's what's happening now. Certainly, that's happening with a lot of government grants. And we think that's going to be very exciting in the next 5 years.
If I could follow up real quick and get your comments about where soybeans stand at this point. Really, soybeans brought biodiesel to the dance here. And I mean, I know it's gotten really expensive to produce biodiesel from soybeans, but could you comment on what the soybean industry has done to bring biodiesel to where it is today?
I think the soybean industry, and by the way, soybean oil makes a terrific biodiesel. We love using it through our factory. It's a very efficient feedstock for us. We see it as always being part of our mix. Certainly, you know, the next 5 years, and a very important part of our mix. As I said, up to this point, we've only used about 10% soybean oil, but certainly as we get into the winter, and we've got to, you know, get more robust grades of biodiesel, we'll start using probably more soybean oil. But I think that, the issue we have with soybean oil is really there's so many factors that control the price of it that we can't control. And one of our big strategic issues is to get control of our feedstock. And it seems to us that soybean oil is that we have the least control over it. Although we believe that, you know, given we believe there's a robust crop out there now, we certainly believe, I think China's been buying very, very heavily through the year. We fully expect soybean prices to ease as we get through the end of the year, and we'll be bigger buyers of it. But one of the great things about soybean oil is it runs extremely efficiently in the plant. We will always be buyers of soybean oil.
Would you think you'd be where you are today were it not for the soybean checkoff and the soybean industry pushing the use of biodiesel?
I think this industry has been built on soybean oil. I think it has a role as a kind of a niche feedstock moving forward. But I think it's an example of why this industry needs to continue to be healthy and government policy needs to continue to help it be healthy, because we're just evolving. You know, we're probably just 10% up the technology curve. Soybean has been the feedstock that we've ridden. The other ones we're mixing and matching are filling in, and we're doing some unique things. But the next evolution is here. We see a second and third feedstock. But yeah, absolutely. This industry was built on soybean oil.
Your line is now muted.
Well, I have a little platform. You know, one of the things we constantly argue is we have somehow allowed our industry to be defined, probably by big oil, as this whole food for fuel debate, which is somewhat ridiculous, especially when you talk about soybean oil. I mean, we take 20% of the crop, the rest of the 80% of the crop goes into the food chain, and it'll feed livestock and whatever. And quite frankly, if you're using soybean oil to eat, you're probably eating too many Twinkies, because that's what it goes into. A much better, higher use for soybean oil is biodiesel. But that's a whole debate that we will never be able to solve and that'll go on raging for years, and we just want to, quite frankly, get out of the debate and get into feedstocks that we can control.
And we'll now take our next question. Caller, your line is open, please.
This is Jerry Perkins from Biofuels Journal. You mentioned that you're going full blast with production. Would you repeat, please, what your production of biodiesel will be this year, and also what it will be after the expansion?
We believe we're going to run to about 45 million gallons this year, which is really our nameplate capacity. The expansion, as it goes in, it's actually going in now, and we hope to have that completed during the fall. May get that to a little higher this year, but we expect our production to go to about 53 million gallons, 55 million gallons with the expansion.
And that would be achieved when, sir?
By year end. And we actually believe it really needs to be achieved by this fall, hopefully by November 1. Because we get into a tough winter up here, and some of the things we're doing are going to help us run more efficiently in cold weather.
And we'll take our next question. Caller, your line is open.
Hi, this is Jim Martin of the Erie Times News. You mentioned some of the problems in the industry as a whole. What has made things work better there? What's the difference between Lake Erie Biofuels and the rest of the industry?
I think that's a great question, and I think it's several things. You know, number one, first of all, we do have some global demand that helps us. We would love to have better demand in America, and we think there's some legislation out there that could help. RFS2, which will help our industry enormously, is sitting right now at the Senate for a vote. That'll help us domestically. We want to sell more domestically. One of the great things we have coming is we have a 2% mandate coming up in Pennsylvania, which will help us enormously. And quite frankly, that's why we're being aggressive in expanding. I think the biggest reason why we're successful, by far, is we can run multiple feedstocks and turn out a very high-quality biodiesel. That has given us such credibility across the East Coast, where we get, 50% of our demand, and where we find our customers don't want to hassle with poor quality biodiesel. It's another reason, quite frankly, why we like branding using the Hero BX, which is a compelling brand for consumers, because you're not going to have problems with it. One thing about our industry, gasoline variability on a scale of 1 to 10 is 2. Biodiesel variability on a scale of 1 to 10 is 12. It just varies tremendously given the way things are processed through different technologies and also given the different feedstocks. We have been able to use a wide variety of feedstocks, blending them very carefully with very good blending technology, with a world-class laboratory where every hour we are testing our biodiesel to give us a very high-quality, pure, sustainable product. I will add this also. One of the things that we have is a proprietary filtration system that was designed in-house that really ensures just great purity through the whole process. So, again, I'll tell you another thing just from a local interest, public interest standpoint here in Erie is obviously we have a great investor in Pat Black who has kept us very well capitalized, which is, again, part of the problem in our industry. Many of our competitors, and we've seen bankruptcies left and right, it's because they just weren't capitalized very well. Another great reason, if you look at the location of our plant here in Erie, we have access to two major rail systems, both CSX and Norfolk Southern. We're right on rail spurs. We have access to great highway trucking in I-90 and I-79, north and south, east and west. And, which most people don't realize, is we have a very effective port here that we ship tankers up to 10 million metric ton tankers in and out of Erie as we ship to Eastern Europe. So a lot of these factors has helped enormously. The 10 million 10 million metric ton tanks. So we have a lot of capability here.
And just a quick follow-up. Did I hear you say that you're going to be one of the largest companies in the nation doing this, or is, you know, or how do you rank right now in terms of production?
We think this year, based on the way we're running, we will be the biggest producer of biodiesel in America this year. Now, obviously, REG will debate that, but we think as they slow, we speed up. So we'll catch them.
And we'll now take our next question. Caller, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Samantha Sloan, I'm freelance. I have several questions, actually. I think some of the Lake Erie biofuel people might remember me from, I've been following this plant since day one. You mentioned expansion. First of all, I think, just as a knee-jerk comment, I think probably the reason that the LEB plant did not go into bankruptcy does, frankly, have to do with Mr. Black's generosity, given the almost doubling, I believe, of the actual price to the contract price. And I agree with you that it's given you a competitive edge because you don't have debt on the facility. I'm interested in job creation in Erie. I understand that this originally, and Mr. Black's ventures originally, were touted as being Erie's savior, basically, 4 or 5 years ago. And very little, if any, other than the completion of the facility, has come to pass. Job numbers, projections, are there any updated numbers? Not this, you know, originally the facility itself was, I believe, going to employ 100 people alone, in addition to the other ventures. I'm just curious what that looks like right now for Erie's local economy, as one question. And number two, a little bit of concern how the expansion is being paid for. Is the facility still relying on Mr. Black's generosity? And if so, is that a forever situation, or is Erie going to be stuck with this biofuel facility, White Elephant, or are you in place to dress it up, build it up, and ultimately either take it public or sell it? How's that for a lot of questions on a Tuesday morning?
Yes. First of all, you know, I had mentioned in my remarks, and you know, Pat Black has played a key role. I will tell you, I started this job on October 1st last year. Pat Black said to me, "You will get no more money." Okay, it's done. Quite frankly, Pat has not put a nickel into this business in a year. It has been running self-sufficiently, cash flowing positive. As far as job creation, we have created just jobs just here in the recent 6 months, just because we've been running so hard. And when we ran multiple feedstocks, especially the tougher feedstocks to run, it does require a couple more people. So there has been some added jobs this year. With the expansion, which will take us to another 10 million gallons, we think that's another handful of jobs, maybe 5 or 6 jobs. If you look at Pat's vision, though, just to divert for a moment, I'm also the president and CEO of Erie Management Group, which is the broader holding company. And quite frankly, if you're local interest in Erie, the big job creator in where we're going is really Cold Draft Industries. When you're talking about past investments in job creation in Erie, we've added 26 jobs to that plant in the past, just this year, in fact, in the past 8 months, bringing that business back to life. And that business produces commercial ice equipment. Mm-hmm. I don't want to divert too much on that during this call, but that is really the job creator in Erie. And again, we've put about 26 jobs in that plant this year, and expect, as the economy gets better, to add perhaps another 50 over the next year. I think the other thing is, at the end of the day, we still have a huge effect on the tax base here, because we do pay taxes. As far as how the expansion is being funded, we are prepared to fund it 100% on our own. Through just internal capital and Hero BX. However, there is significant stimulus and grant money out there that we hope to tap into, and that would be a matching fund basis where they would probably match us 50-50 on about a $5 million investment. You know, the other thing I would mention, talking about, our investment in biofuels, obviously it's a significant investment. We are constantly approached from outside investors, and we're interested in outside investors. But we believe we're probably about a year away from wanting any more equity in this company, because we believe the value of the company is going to improve significantly in the next year, especially as we look at acquisitions and expansion in the U.S., given the low asset value out there for many of these investments and plants that, quite frankly, have pretty good technology, but have ran into problems because of capital issues and pricing issues and everything else. So we see all kinds of other sources of capital. As I said earlier, Pat made the big investment. Now he wants to see it work and work on its own and be fully sustainable, and we've been that for the last year.
If there are no more questions, then we conclude this teleconference. An audio transcript of this call will be available within the next 48 hours by visiting www.herobx.com/press. Thank you and have a great day.